Previously on Video Killers.
A balloon to all colors.
Did it float?
Oh, yes. They float, Georgie. They float. And when you're down here with me, you float down!
Hello and welcome to Video Killers. I'm Tim Hawley and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Colette Ritchie.
Oh, hi.
And Greg Kay.
I am fresh from a flu shot today, so if I act weird, it's the flu shot speaking.
If I act weird, it's because I had what I always call a migraine today, but I don't actually know what they are. I just hurt everywhere.
Everywhere? Or just your head?
It's like really specific. It starts in my head usually, and then it works all the way down to my back and sometimes my legs.
It sounds fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. I feel fine now, but I fell asleep, so now I'm filled with sleepy noodles.
Yeah. You're full of sleepy noodles?
I'm made of sleepy noodles.
Well, this will be an interesting talk.
Wait, didn't you tell me that's the name of her new podcast?
Yeah.
Just adding to the network.
Sleepy noodles, where I whine about being tired and hungry.
Didn't tell bedtime stories that involve pasta?
Maybe.
I guess a good way to kick off our special episode. This one will drop the week of Halloween, I believe. So we figured what better subject to talk about than slasher films, because, Halloween and all.
Yeah.
We were going to try and go into some more obscure slashers that maybe people haven't heard of, or specifically maybe they've heard of but haven't checked out, and give some recommendations on ones that we like or just find interesting. But I figured before we get into some of the recommendations, what to you guys, like, what do you think defines a slasher? Because I was trying to think about it, and there's so many films that like sort of consider slashers, but they're also sort of slasher adjacent, If a ghost is going around picking people off, is that a slasher film?
Ghosts can be slashers.
Go ahead, droopy nipples.
Droopy nipples? I'll have you know. That's not happening. Sleepy noodles.
Sleepy noodles, what were you going to say?
I don't know. I have no idea now. I was going to say, as long as one person's doing all the killing and there's multiple kills and, I guess there has to be some kind of vengeance involved. So maybe I wouldn't say Maniac Cop is necessarily a slasher, although it would kind of be a slasher.
Well, he has vengeance.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, I guess he does. He kind of seems...
I don't know if vengeance is necessarily it.
I don't think vengeance is either. I mean, that's debatable, of course. I mean, it doesn't hurt. But I always felt like, it's got to have a series of people that die, and they've got to die in more than one way, generally, in a slasher. But I don't know if that's needed, but that's... more fun.
Yeah. I think it makes it more entertaining, but there's plenty of slashers you could point to that, like, the killer just uses a knife the entire movie, or they have a specific,
Or like they electrocute people from their motorcycle.
They seem to me, at least in my thoughts, slasher needs to have some sort of stabbing device. Guns don't work. Because I remember seeing a Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. The poster art way back in the day was a Christmas ornament hanging from a tree with a gun reflecting. And it's like, ooh. And I was like, that's not scary. Because, yes, guns are scarier. But
yes.
Slashers are meant to be an escapism.
The continuing blood-curdling saga of the story so controversial, it can only be told on home video. Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2. Santa's back, and he's mighty miffed at the naughty nun who drove his demented brother on a murderous rampage that made headlines across the country. Now, step by step, weapon by weapon, victim by victim, Santa's gonna finish what his brother started.
So a cutting blade of some sort? So like an axe would cut?
Or a pitchfork, if you will. Or,
some sort of a harpoon. Stabbing implement. That's not even a necessarily a criteria, but I would agree that like a gun make turns it into something else, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because I feel like what, like, the like, part of it is that, like, you know, the people can get away. Like, there's a potential for, like, people to escape what's going to happen. And you can't really escape a gun so much.
I would say, like, the, like, I mean, I was trying to think about this because I was like, well, if it's a ghost going on killing people, I was like, well, Sledgehammer is a very much so a slasher film.
Yeah,
and that is like a, you know, there's a kind of a ghost element to it, including a ghost sledgehammer itself.
Well, so, there's a whole Friday the 13th where he's just possessing people. So that kind of makes him a ghost.
Yeah, there's that. Well, and one could argue that Jason eventually is just undead, a zombie.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's true.
I think he's undead and just in the second movie. He's just like...
I don't even know if there's an argument there.
Right? No, I think, he's coming back to life, so.
Yeah. Suspenseful. I think they need to have, like, scenes of suspense where you're, like, sitting on the edge of your... And the cat jumps or whatever, but...
Yeah.
Whether or not they're successful.
Right. And there's always one final person who fights him off and kills them.
Right.
But then they always, and in a real true slasher, a, you know, true blue, red, white, and blue slasher, the slasher has to jump up again one more time at the end.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
There has to be nudity at some point or another.
I don't think it has to be,
but it's, again, true blue.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like.
It, but the best ones always seem to. So, why break if it ain't broken?
I feel like there was one I wanted to talk about where the nudity was more, nudity was flipped, but not obviously. I don't remember anything. I hardly remember my own name.
Maybe it'll come up in the conversation.
Well, it doesn't even have nudity, but they have to have scenes where they're being naughty enough that the killer's going to take them out. So they have to take a shower.
They have to be getting up to no good or in some manner.
Yeah, they're up to sexual shenanigans, if you will.
Because say, like, the launching point of a modern day slasher would be like what, Psycho and Peeping Tom, right? And like,
sure, I love that.
Yeah,
at least the start of it. Combined with giallos, I would.
Yeah, and then it kind of evolved into giallos.
Those all usually have nudity.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Psycho has nudity though.
The bathroom. The murderer, you see, crept in here. Very slowly, of course, the shower was on, there was no sound. And,
But Psycho's only one kill that we see.
Doesn't he kill, Loomis on the stairs. Martin Balsman.
Oh, right. Balsman. Yeah.
So, but you're right. It's not full of. It's almost really not a slasher.
Like, the second one is. But it's always full of kills.
But it's also. I mean, it's always pointed to as a slasher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's like, got the knife kill in the shower. I mean, those are two big trademarks.
Mm-hmm.
But like Peeping Tom, I mean, he's going around picking off people, and there's multiple kills in that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know.
Revisit Peeping Tom.
We had never seen it. We just watched it for the first time. It was one of those. We're kind of checking off some like blind spots of the classics that we should have seen by now, and that was on Amazon Prime. So we watched that recently. It's a really interesting movie. It's
very interesting. I don't think anybody else. Frames their killer quite like that movie does. Like, nobody dips back into that well, which I think is interesting.
Well, yeah, because it all but killed that man's career,
right?
Career. So, yeah. I think most people are like,
stay away from that one.
Stay away from that.
Yeah. But I was gonna say, like, yeah, a few elements that I always look for in slashers that like make them is either like there's the mystery element that's either like kind of like an like who the killer is, you know, the whodunit kind of element. That always like that a lot of times is very obvious, but sometimes there's like a twist at the end. You're like, oh wow, I didn't really see that one coming, which is always fun. Or it's got like really, really good atmosphere to it. Like there's like just like a really just cool setting or environment. And then a lot of times, then even if those two elements don't work, as long as it has like cool effects work and some interesting kills, then I feel like then a lot of times then that like will make up for the lack of story or plotting or, you know, characters. Like, as if it, like, there's a good effects artist like Tom Savini, say, on a film that does some really cool effects work or some cool gags. It's like, oh, wow, I haven't seen that before. That it kind of makes it worth a watch. So, I mean, those are kind of the main checkpoints for me.
Yeah, I think our list of all the things we've kind of said, now, slasher doesn't necessarily have to have all of them.
No.
But it has to have a combination of all of the, you know, of them, you know, some of them together at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, there's like, it's like serial killer films are, you know, kind of slashers, but like, I wouldn't really consider like Silence of the Lambs necessarily a slasher.
No.
But it's like
Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, is that it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's not a slasher. That's just a dark movie.
Yeah. There are, though, movies where like they're clearly a serial killer, like there's going around killing people. It's just like the weird, like, it's like the way it's framed or something. I don't know.
Like, it has to have one foot out of reality, I feel like.
Right. Okay. A little bit. It has to have like a little fun to it. Mm-hmm. You know, where Henry and Silence of the Lambs are very serious films, and they take the subject seriously. A slasher film doesn't at all.
Right.
Even the most serious of them. If it's just about a guy going around killing people, you know, we're all watching it for escapism. It's like playing a video game.
Yeah.
You know, you're not taking it seriously when people die, you know.
What? You're not?
Oops.
Are you not supposed to?
You've been watching them wrong all this time, Floppy Doodle.
Floppy Doodle. Good Lord.
Sleepy Noodles.
Sleepy Noodles.
But then I was going to say, then you have like Black Christmas that kind of led into like kind of influencing Halloween, which then became the kind of granddaddy then at that point, or like the one that really set the bar of like what Friday the 13th and all those ones that came after it became.
Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago. Michael?
But that's funny because those two are clearly set on holidays, and then that holiday theme became such a thing. Like, even Friday the 13th, like, they had the name before they even had the movie. It was just like, so there's just like trying to like My Bloody Valentine, all these different holiday themed slashers, which is like a funny thing that just sort of seems to run through, especially the 80s slashers a lot.
Yeah.
But then you also have like the location usually plays a huge part of a lot of the great slashers, in my opinion. Like, if it has a really interesting location, then a lot of times then it's like it's more watchable, because like, oh cool, this one takes place in this type of environment, whatever. And it's like there's a lot of them that, like, you know, in the woods, or you're in a department store, or you're in just an old abandoned house, or you're like, it's all the slashers that take place at college, or like in a
like
hospital,
Manhattan.
Yeah, right.
Friday the 13th, part 8. Jason takes Manhattan. No.
But it's always like that's like a framing device, and it's like they're all in this one, and sometimes it's a big location, sometimes it's a small location, but it's like the location always plays such a huge factor of like how the kills are going to be played out, you know. Like, are they at, like, you know, are they in this like cabin in the woods? Like, well, what would be in a cabin in the woods? And those are the devices that are going to be used to kill them, you know. It's like, so it's like you kind of know what you're going to get by the setting a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Atmosphere is big. It's king to a good slasher film. But I like about slasher films is you can take almost any genre and kind of drop the slasher film motif into it.
Mm-hmm.
A good example is like one of the movies I'm going to talk about today is Visiting Hours, and that is kind of a melodrama that, if played differently, it could be a same story but done differently. Like, the guy who disagrees with her opinions on this case could just be someone that maybe she even like eventually gets to like, because, you know, opposites attract. It could be that movie.
Yeah.
But no, it's not that movie. It's the guy who's out the killer. But. Yeah.
Because you casted Michael Ironside and he's a fucking lunatic.
So scary.
I mean, I guess should we just get into it then? Like, should we start with Visiting Hours? Because we just rewatched that one too.
Yeah, let's dig into Visiting Hours.
You've heard commercials where people tell you what they thought about a movie. Listen to what an entire audience had to say about Visiting Hours. This is not a trick. The screams you are hearing are the actual audience reaction to a sneak preview of Visiting Hours, a film so frightening you may never recover. Visiting Hours, rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
Yeah, I mean, that's one I've always loved. Like, we had seen it years ago on VHS, but we just rewatched, like, the Scream Factory Blu-ray last night, and man, it's such a slow burn, but it's such an interesting one because Michael Ironside is so unhinged in it and does such a good job of being so crazy. And there's a couple moments where, like, you're like, what is he up to?
Call like, him unhinged though. Like, he's like a really specific kind of intense. Like, yeah, he's just scared. Like, he keeps like dressing up and trying to blend into different backgrounds, and it's as though, you know, the Shape or Michael Myers, like, dressed up in a nurse's outfit to like go blend in somewhere, and you're just like, he's scary all the time.
Should we tell people the plot in case
I guess we can get into it. Yeah, with it, I mean, you kind of touched on it just a second ago, but yeah
I could read what IMDb says and just keep it easy and go from there. IMDb says, a deranged misogynist killer assaults a journalist. When he discovers that she survived that attack, he follows her to the hospital to finish her off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is really not doing it justice. That's really not what it's. I mean, it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's the base of
his side. That's his portion of the story. But then, like, her whole thing is like there's a whole nother, like, so there's so much of the movie is like, you know, people dealing with the PTSD of like being attacked by somebody like that. Like, it's kind of, I don't know, it was very interesting in that. On that end of it, but a lot of it is that, like, she's trying to get over being attacked. The nurse is trying to, like, help her through that process, and, like, you find out later she comes from, like, an abusive, like, relationship, so she can identify with some of it. And then, like, you know, she runs into somebody else who's, like, been attacked by this guy, and, like, it's just,
there's also, like,
covers, and it also, everybody's perspective of that is so different, and, like, what they draw from after that to like get through it is different. It's very interesting.
Yeah, everybody's character is pretty well fleshed out. There's, I mean, there's even that, like, the kind of side character, the kind of younger girl who's a kind of like a, I don't know if she's necessarily a prostitute.
She was good.
Yeah,
William Shatner's in it. We didn't mention that yet.
Yeah, Shat's in
oh
it.
Oh my god, Shat's in it.
He's not really in it though. I mean, he's in it, but he's in the beginning, and he kind of shows up at the end doing Shatner stuff.
Shows up a couple times just randomly, just to be Shatner.
To Shatner dad her. He's the Shatner dad in that movie.
The Shatner dad. Did you know that he actually wanted to play Colt Hawker?
Yeah.
Michael Ironside's character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were considering it until Ironside came out.
And then
came
Ironside
along.
Showed up.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have been.
I'd love to live
that.
In another universe just to see it. You know, I think Ironside did great. You know, he's a
There's no way Shatner could have done as good of a job as Ironside did. Ironside's phenomenal.
And
what's
the main actress lady's name?
Lee Grant.
Lee Grant. She, like, her intensity plays off of his intensity, like, so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cannot see Shatner bringing something to the table where she could play off of like that. Like,
yeah, it would have been a whole different movie. It really would have.
Yeah.
It would have been more comical, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely wouldn't have been as threatening. No. Ironside brings threatening like no one else.
Mm-hmm.
Even in a straight good guy role.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I never trust him.
Yeah, we watched an interview with the writer last night that's on the disc. We didn't watch all the interviews and stuff, but there's a long interview with the writer talking about the kind of how he's always been fascinated by like child abuse and how it affects people, and like, and like how it's like one of the most fucked up things that like you could do is to like to traumatize a child. And so like a lot of his writings have been coming from that place, or at least specifically this movie. But he went on to write Of Unknown Origin, that Peter Weller movie where he's like fighting a rat, which is like, I love. It's so weird. It's such a weird
movie. Tormented by a rat.
Yeah.
It haunts our cities. It's here. In this house. Now. It wants them. If it doesn't scare you to death, it will find another way. Of Unknown Origin, rated R, opens Wednesday, November 23rd at a theater near you.
And then he also wrote the V miniseries. Like, he wrote like he's one of the main writers on V, The Final Battle, which is like pretty crazy. Like, mm-hmm. It's like he has some solid writing credits. But yeah, I feel like Visiting Hours, like, is one of the people probably recognize the poster
Oh yeah.
But it's such a unique and like really interesting movie. Like,
and the poster and the name do the movie no justice. Mm-mm. Like, yeah,
originally it's called The Fright, which I'm not sure if that's much better.
That doesn't make sense either.
It was just an overall good movie with like a satisfying end, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be. Once it started, I was like, oh, it's like this. Or like, I thought it was just going to be a shallow, like a giallo. I thought it was going to be just like misogyny and you're just watching women being tortured and, you know, stuff on screen. But then, once they started like pulling apart the psychology of what happened to her after that, I was like, all right, movie, what do you got? I'm willing to sit here and be open to it.
Well, it kind of landed in that kind of sweet spot before all the rules were established and you could actually have a movie with a plot. You know, eventually they became more just kill, 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 take a shower, kill, kill, kill.
Yeah.
You know, this one had more of a...
Well, to be fair, Ironside does shower a couple times. You just don't see him do it.
That leather vest he's wearing.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I don't really need to go too deep into it, but we inadvertently had an interesting double feature last night because we rewatched Visiting Hours, which I thoroughly enjoyed and had seen before, and then we watched a film that I had never seen before. I was just always aware of it because of the poster, and that's called Eyes of a Stranger. What it is.
Eyes of a Stranger is a strange bird in the mad slasher movie category. It's better made than all the other ones I've seen in the last year, but it still is needlessly gross and vile. There's no reason why we have to suffer through a scene where the killer slaps around a blind teenage girl before sexually attacking her.
Which is written by the guy who wrote like Friday the 13th Part 2 and was one of the uncredited writers on Friday the 13th Part 1. And it's directed by Ken Wiederhorn, who did like Shockwaves and Return of the Living Dead Part 2. And
we'll forgive him for Return of the Living Dead Part 2. Because Shockwaves is really good. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, it's not a great one, but it's funny because it's very similar to Visiting Hours.
Yeah. Had a lot of common things where I was like, well, you know, I can't remember which one we watched first, but I was like, wow, you don't see that in a lot of horror movies. And then the very next movie we watched, I was like, there it is again. Didn't you almost never see this?
But it was like the main lady, she's like a reporter, right? Or is she...
We must have watched that one first.
No, we watched that one second.
Oh, damn.
Well, I can read the IMDb again.
Yeah.
All right. Eyes of a Stranger, 1981. A reporter suspects a creepy neighbor who lives in the high-rise building across from hers is a serial killer terrorizing the Miami area.
So it's like a combination of Visiting Hours and Someone's Watching Me, if anybody's ever seen that, where it's like it's a John Carpenter made-for-TV kind of thriller slasher, where it's like these like high-rise, this guy's like spying on people in the neighboring high-rise and tormenting them. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's kind of those two combined, but there's a couple fun kills in it. It was like there's one in particular where it's like a meat cleaver where like the killer comes up behind a guy and like just one swipe hacks his head completely off, decapitates him, and then the head ends up in the aquarium. So you got like a nice cool like severed head in the aquarium shot. That was kind of a memorable moment. But
I've seen that kill. I don't know if I've seen this movie, but I'm sure that's made its way into some compilation.
I'm sure.
What?
Ooh. Oh dear!
Who's got the droopy nipples now?
Yeah, why? But yeah,
I don't know what that even means.
I don't either. But it just insinuates something that's very clear. There was a lot of in that one too. There was a lot of like, how are they just like explored a lot of areas that like other movies never really did, like. I don't know. Well, maybe I was going to start listing things. And I was like, oh, I guess people do that too. They just don't do it as well. Where they're like, they really establish our like, you know, final lady and her life and like the people in her life. And so you kind of start caring about her in a different way, but then they shift what you think is going to happen. And the twist is very like, oh no, no, why? Stop it. No, what's going on? But again, and then it's very, it has, I don't know, it's very not misogynistic in ways where I thought it was really going to be bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
And it's an early role for Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yep. She plays a blind, mute sister of the main character.
Yeah. Right? It's trauma-induced.
Yeah.
So she was...
So it's like another traumatic... Yeah, it's like such a, like I said, it's like very similar to Visiting Hours in really weird ways. It's like, I don't know, like I completely picked it at random. I'm like, well, here's another slasher that I've never seen, but I've always seen this poster. Let's just pull the trigger on this and just see if it's any good.
Sounds like a perfect
I honestly suggest them as a double feature.
Yeah.
Just if somebody wants that for fun.
Yeah.
Tom Savini was involved.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'd say like that's the one thing I think the reason I know of the movie is because of like all the people involved. Like it's like the writer of Friday the 13th Part 2. It's directed by Ken Wiederhorn. It's got some Savini effects. It's got like a bunch of like kind of talent that I'm aware of. It's just, it was a blind spot for us until last night.
Yeah. It's also another one of those movies where I'm like, well, should I start shutting my blinds more often? Like,
awesome. I have not seen that one, so thank you. I will check that one out.
Another one that we watched recently that I'd been aware of forever that I enjoyed. It's pretty straightforward, but it's got a lot of fun kills, and it's just an entertaining ride. It was a House on Sorority Row, the original one from the 80s. There's a lot of really unlikable characters.
You gotta remind me what this is, because.
A certain kind of girl joins Pi Theta Sorority. A girl who likes to party and likes to get close to her friends. A girl whose extracurricular activities were more daring than most. A girl who could turn her fantasies into reality.
One more fling won't set us back any.
Then again, Pi Theta was different from other sororities. Because in this sorority, nothing is off limits, as long as it's fun for the girls. So when it came time to say goodbye, they decided to make real sure that no one would ever forget the girls in the house on Sorority Row.
It starts off with all the girls are trying to have a party at the end of the year or whatever, and the house mom wants them out. They have to leave, and then they kill the house mom. This is a little minor spoiler, but it happens right at the beginning of the movie. So like it's pretty much the setup.
It's a prank gone wrong.
A prank. Right. They accidentally kill her, even though the prank is pretty like it's like they're just asking like, for an accident.
Pull a gun
to happen.
Out at her and
It is a terrible prank.
They fire the gun point blank at her with like a blank in it, but then they have actual bullets in the gun as well. So it's like that doesn't make any sense. Anyway, they kill the mom. They try and hide her body so they can still have a party, because that's what you do, I guess, by dumping it into the most disgusting pool imaginable that just happened to be on site where they filmed this thing.
Also, a pool, not a good place to hide the body.
Yeah,
it turns out
for parties,
especially a bunch of drunk college kids.
Right.
And then they just have
where are they going to go eventually?
The pool. Yeah.
And then it's like a huge party. Like they have a live band and like there's tons of people there. So it's like, and it's just like, it just kind of, you know, and then obviously like people start getting picked off one by one by an unknown assailant. And it's just like, but there's some fun kills in it. There's like all the girls are pretty much like unlikable except for like the kind of, you know, main final girl that you're supposed to be rooting for. Mm-hmm. There's a hilarious moment where some drunken dudes jump in the pool and are swimming around the disgusting water. And one of them decides he says, I'm a sea pig for some reason before he jumps into the water.
Well, it was like, oh, does he? Yeah. And then they like, all the like sorority girls involved with the murder come running down to the pool, and he doesn't know what to do because he's been caught doing the thing, and he's just like, I'm a sea pig. Yeah. Like, why did you stick with that? Yeah. Why was that what you came out with?
I like that movie a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of kills in it, so that
And they change up the kills, and it's like it's pretty fun all over the place. Also, there's I found out that the band in the movie is like this kind of like power pop, like very like late 70s, early 80s power pop band, which I'm a kind of a sucker for that kind of cheesy music. But I looked them up, and it's the band is called 4 out of 5 Doctors, and the album that all the songs they play is off of the album Second Opinion. Which is like, so dumb. So I thought that was really funny, but it's a fun. I don't want to like spoil any more of it, but there's some. There's some really funny bad line delivery, a couple really awkward line deliveries in it. There's some fun kills. It's just like a fun little mystery. It's like, if you've seen a lot of 80s slashers, it's really not much that you have, you know, there's really nothing you haven't seen before, but it's, if it's one that you haven't checked off your list, if you're kind of a sucker for slashers, I think it's a, it's definitely worth a watch.
Mm-hmm.
It checks a lot of those boxes we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does have a one weird thing where, like, I've never seen it before at the beginning with the, that prank. Like, yeah. I've, that is just weird. Well, it was a weird decision on their part.
Aren't they also sitting around discussing what they're going to do to the house mom while eating chicken and throwing the chicken bones into the pool?
No, right. They totally are.
It's so gross.
Fried chicken on a plate.
I don't think KFC endorsed that.
No, it's not even out of a bucket. It's just like on a tray, I think. Like, it's,
in my mind, they've got a bucket.
But it's like you're eating fried chicken, like, okay, you're just going to throw the bone somewhere, but why would you throw it into like a disgusting pool? Like, you're just making that like even more of a cesspool.
I could kind of see why, you know, like the dorm mother didn't like them so much.
Yeah, I can too.
All right, back to you, Greg.
All righty. I'll talk about Scream for Help, since I know we've all seen that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, what's that
Michael
one about?
Winner.
Michael Winner, in his typical sleaziness. I actually really like this movie. It's really bad, though. I think it feels like, okay, the plot, real quick. It's a teenage girl discovers that her stepfather is trying to murder her and her mother, and when she tells people, no one believes her, says IMDb.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's the plot. That really is the plot this time. It starts out with this after-school special vibe where it's just a teenage girl sitting in her room.
My name is Christina Ruth Cromwell. I'm 17. I think my stepfather is trying to murder my mother. I've told people that my stepfather is trying to murder my mother. Nobody believes me. So I'm writing this down in case something happens to me. It began several weeks ago. I was having a nightmare when a strange sound echoed up through our house.
We're listening to her diary. And she just basically jumps right into the plot.
There's also like voiceover unrelated to the diary. Like when she's on her bike, like chasing after him in the car. Isn't there like a voiceover playing, like almost like a private detective kind of film noir kind of voiceover?
I knew I was right about Paul Fox. I ditched school the next day. I waited outside the dealership my mom owned. She'd inherited it from her dad, along with a lot of the rest of the town. Paul Fox was just the salesman there when she met him.
Tone is all over the place in this movie, because it doesn't make any sense.
Nothing makes sense. It kind of reminded me of a movie that came later, a little bit later, called The Stepfather, which is a much classier affair than this one.
Yeah.
I don't know what I thought. I'm sorry.
This is very upsetting. Old man Grace is still there.
No, forget it, honey. Forget it. She probably just got the name wrong or something.
Hodgkins, what's to get wrong?
What did you say?
Huh? Wait a minute. Who am I here?
Jerry.
Jerry. Jerry Blake. Thank you, honey.
Stepfather's a solid movie.
Yeah, very. This one's not solid, but this one's more fun in a lot of ways because it's so bonkers that if you haven't seen it, go. It's on Tubi or somewhere. It's pretty easy to find.
We watched it on VHS when we watched it, so I have not seen. I have not seen the Blu-ray.
Neither have I. I wonder if there's any specials on it or any extras on it.
I think there is. I thought for some reason I remembered hearing that Tom Holland agreed to go on and talk about it, even though he's like completely like written that movie off. Because I don't know if you talked about this before, but yeah, Tom Holland wrote it, the guy who wrote and directed like Child's Play and Fright Night. Mm-hmm. And this was the movie that tipped him to want to direct. He's like, nobody is ever directing one of my scripts again.
He probably wanted to talk about it because he's like, here's what the movie was supposed to be. And
which would be interesting because. Yeah. There's clearly something there, but like I just don't know what, like they went off the rails really hard on that one.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it and take off that Michael Winner
sleaze
filter that he has over it, you can see a Tom Holland, you can see a Holland story there.
Yeah.
A Tom Holland story underneath that. It does have an interview with him on the Blu-ray and David Allen Brooks, who's the stepfather in that one.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
She refers to everyone by their full name all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is such a weird thing. It's just...
I think I don't really remember this movie, but I feel like I remember saying that could be a drinking game.
Yeah, because it happens so much.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
My name is Christina Ruth Cromwell.
I'm telling the truth, Josh Dealey. You've been crazy to get Paul Fox ever since he married your mother.
What's that got to do with Paul Fox?
You found out something about Paul Fox, right?
I was right about Paul Fox. This is Christy Cromwell.
Janie was murdered.
By who?
Paul Fox.
It was like written in the script that way. Like it was written in the script. Like this is the placeholder for the name.
Decipher between characters.
And then they just like totally just like read it like verbatim. It might be a hard one to watch on your own, but I'd say like it's definitely a fun one to watch with a group because it's bonkers.
It's funny that I tend to find the drinking games because like I haven't drank in 12 years, but. That's definitely, if you play drinking games in movies, that's a fun one. That you would probably have a trip to the emergency room.
So well, I guess then I'll go with one that, again, is not a good movie by any means, but it's a fun watch. And it's especially a fun watch with a group. And that is the, there's multiple films under this name, but it's the 80s slasher called Intruder.
Good evening, Walnut Lake shoppers.
It's closing time.
Store will be closing in 15 minutes.
But the night crew still has work to do.
Oh my God, we're gonna get in so much trouble.
Because there's one last customer who isn't satisfied.
No.
This creep keeps calling her. He's driving us nuts.
Leave me alone.
He wants to slash their prices.
Who's there?
He wants to cut their inventory.
You're crazy!
In fact, he wants to chop. Until they all drop.
I saw him kill Linda.
And now, he's turning their retail store...
There's gonna be one more killing here tonight.
...into a wholesale slaughterhouse. Intruder.
That is the guy who wrote Evil Dead 2. I can't remember what his name is. Scott something. But yeah, he's the guy he wrote... He was one of the co-writers on Evil Dead 2... And so he's like one of Sam Raimi's friends or, you know, collaborators. So he wrote and directed it. And it stars Sam Raimi and Ted Raimi and Bruce Campbell has a cameo in it. And the guy, I can't remember the character's name, but the guy who yells out Bobby Joe over and over again in the redneck guy in Evil Dead 2, he's in it. But it takes place in a grocery store, which I think I mentioned in the last episode that movies that take place in grocery stores and department stores and stuff, I always find really fascinating and fun because it's like seeing that era of things that we're familiar with.
Slice of life.
Yeah. But it's the entire thing is like a grocery store crew overnight working in the store. And then a killer gets in and starts picking them off one by one. It's super dumb, but it's got really fun kills in it. It's one of the main things because it's one of the very early effects jobs by K&B, which is
Greg Nicotero,
Howard Berger, and some Kurtzman.
Yeah, what's its first name?
But yeah,
it's Scott Spiegel, by the way.
Scott Spiegel. There we go.
It was like that's wrong. I know it's not.
Directed.
Lawrence Bender was one of the writers, which is he's Tarantino's guy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
He's the producer for Tarantino movies.
So yeah, it's just got like a lot of like it's an early work by a lot of these guys, and it's just really it's like again it's not a good movie. It's just a lot of fun. Yeah, and the Blu-ray that Synapse I believe put out it has like an uncut version, so there's extra gore that wasn't released in their previous versions, and it's really solid. Like there's some really like over the top kills. There's also some really bonkers camera work in it that I remember really enjoying. Like there's a shot where they put the camera in the shopping cart and you're seeing it go down the aisles for some reason. It doesn't make any sense. There's also a POV shot out of the rotary phone. So you're seeing somebody dial the, like it doesn't make any sense.
People,
but it's
they're
like,
just having fun. Like,
they're just having fun. Yeah. Like, I like that. Like, I love when they do stuff like that.
Yeah. It's like they're all working for free and they're like, well, what do you want to do that you haven't done already? And they're like, I want a POV from a camera, from like a phone dialing.
Inside of a phone,
and it's like, we can do that.
Why not? That one, I mean, you got K&B there. You can do anything, really.
You can do whatever you want.
But this is one of their very first solo gigs. I think my understanding was that they were working on Phantasm 2 under Mark Sjostrom at that point. And then at night, they were filming during the day. And then at night, they were going and shooting Intruder during the like, so they weren't really sleeping. Like on sets, they would sleep underneath tables to take little naps, but they were like doing two movies simultaneously.
I don't know. Like, little naps. As an effects person, you can really sleep for like 8 hour blocks on set. Like, honestly.
Well, they're probably also sculpting and like pulling molds and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, maybe.
But anyway, yeah, like
doing drugs, I would assume, to keep you awake that long.
If people aren't familiar with KMB, like they're responsible for like, I mean, effects in all the Robert Rodriguez films and Tarantino films.
Greg Nicotero did all the Walking Dead.
Yeah, he's like one of the main producers on the Walking Dead now. I mean, they're incredible effects guys. Like they've done
Creepshow reboot,
so much good stuff. So this is like very young KMB solo gig.
And this is one I didn't even ask what it was about because I remember this movie and we did not watch this recently.
No, it's memorable ago. Even though it's kind of, you know, a little wonky and just,
yeah, definitely not the best, but it is fun. And if you work in a grocery store setting or like you know, big box retail, it's fun because it's like they do a lot of stuff in like back rooms and you're just like or like, you know, it's just the whole time you're
I remember back rooms.
You're like, that's why I thought you were dead the other day when you didn't answer my page.
Cool. Good one.
What was the year of that one? Did you look it up?
Yeah, that's 89.
89. Okay,
when it was released. I think it was shot
87 or something?
Yeah, I think it was shot like a year before at least.
Okay, yeah. But there's multiple Intruders if you look up. So Intruder from 89 is the one that people will be looking for if they're. And like I guess that Synapse has a really great Blu-ray of it that looks amazing, and I'm sure it's streaming somewhere. I just don't know where.
Yeah, 88 looks like it was shot. Anyway, all right, great one. I'll go next.
Yeah,
I watched Haunted Wheaton. The synopsis they wrote is obviously someone who made the movie.
Okay.
20 years ago, a deadly accident forced Eddie Burr from his home. Since Eddie was younger, he wanted to be part of the family business, the Berber Haunted House. A notice placed on the local fraternity giving permission to use the old house as a fundraiser. They soon are haunted down and placed in the haunted house. One thing is for sure, no one knows what's really going on. People are dying and people are laughing. That's it.
Okay.
Don't get that. That's okay. This is what the movie is.
People are dying and people are laughing. Is it the audience that's laughing?
I think they're actually talking about the extras that they hired that came in. The movie has an interesting angle. It's these fraternity brothers need money. Are they going to lose a fraternity to that type of movie? But they are seriously given access to the haunted house attraction that they have down the street. It's one of those haunted houses where you go from room to room. And each room has a scene that you watch, and then you go to the next room. And this one does that. So every scene is someone actually getting killed. But the audience doesn't know. And they're like, kill him! Stick the knife in him! Hammer his head, you know? Use a baseball bat. It's pretty fun for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What year is it from?
91. But I think, like the other one, this one was shot earlier.
There's that movie that AGFA released, not that like last year, that was an unreleased film shot in Austin, Texas, starring John Hawks from, like, he's in Dust Till Dawn and Eastbound and Down and stuff.
Deadwood.
But it's similar plot because it's like a haunted house thing, you know, like, and people kind of get stuck in there and there's like a killer taking people out. So
it's killing the adjacent actors and the scenes.
But that's also from 91.
They are similar, and I've seen the one you're talking about as well with John Hawk, and they couldn't be different.
Right. But I'm just saying, though, it's the same time period. They're very similar setups. Yeah. Like, it's similar like plot devices.
That's interesting. I agree. Yeah. It's a fun movie. I ended up really enjoying it. You could tell they were having a blast shooting it.
That comes through.
I always like that. There's one guy that's in it who plays like kind of the comic relief in it. You're either going to love him or hate him. If you hate him, you're going to hate the movie. If you love him, probably didn't at first, but he does grow on you and he does kind of make the movie.
There's always, I feel like a lot of slashers always have like at least one, if not multiple, really, really obnoxious characters. Like people that you're like, just like, okay, when are they going to die?
Yeah, take him out. Oh my God.
Does Haunted Ween have like some pretty fun kills then? Like, is it like the effects work pretty awesome or is it just
not overly gory, but they have like fun gags, killer gags, especially in the haunted house. You know, like there's one part where they take a baseball bat and the killer just swings at the guy's head and it goes flying the head.
Okay.
You know, so it's that kind of caliber. But they, like
Jason Takes Manhattan knockoff.
Right. Yeah, it is. So it's not as cool as that one, even though I don't care for that movie, but I do like that scene when the guy's head's rolling off the roof. Yeah. Doug Robertson is the filmmaker's one and only film. And I should bring that up, that the directing and blocking of the scenes is great. I mean, really, for a low budget, obviously not much money spent on it, it looks as good as it could. in a lot of ways. I mean, the acting wasn't good, but
it sounds like it nailed the atmosphere more than anything, and that's enough to hold it. So, like, it's like I was saying before, it's like as long as one of those elements kind of comes through, then that kind of makes it more of a memorable watch. So, yeah, cool.
I see a movie on the list that on Tim's list that.
This one?
Yeah.
That was a question mark, too, because I was like, does it count as a slasher?
I was going to say, Ghosts can be slashers. Because that's just a twist to that one. I don't know if that's a spoiler, sorry. But
It's ruined for a movie we haven't heard a title for yet.
Yeah.
Ah, sweet.
Do you want to talk about it?
I don't know. Did I ruin it?
No, I don't think so.
Say it. Let's hear it.
It's Death Spa.
Welcome to the health club where you'll sweat blood.
Have a look without a spotter, Freddy. Weight falls on your chest and you can really get squashed.
It's the place for a killer workout. An unquiet spirit reaches out from beyond the grave for revenge. Death Spa. An exercise in terror.
What a fantastic weight reduction program. People get so thin they disappear.
Death Spa is awesome. That is a great slasher film. Yes. You're right. It's a ghost, but it meets everything. And like,
it's supernatural and stuff. Yeah. But yeah.
That's all right. Yeah. Didn't we just say that Jason's supernatural?
I guess. Yeah.
He's a zombie, basically.
Yeah. Death Spa is full blown bonkers.
Oh, like, yeah.
It is.
But you can also tell everybody's having fun. Like the guy from Dawn of the Dead is in it.
Yeah. Ken Forhey.
Yeah. And he is having a lot of fun in his teensy tiny shorts. Definitely flirting with the other main guy. Like, it's like things are just like things happen in that movie where I'm like, man, I wish more of these slashers would have done just any one of the things that this movie did.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the description on this one is on IMDb, but basically the premise is it's like a futuristic spa or gym, really. I don't know if it's really not really spa, but it's run by computers, and the main guy who owns it, his wife died of self-induced suicide where she lit herself on fire in a wheelchair. And then her brother also works at the spa who runs the computers. And then people start dying in mysterious fashions of things malfunctioning, or it seems, or maybe it's a computer, or maybe it's a killer. You don't really know, but there's like none of it really adds up, because like if it was a computer, like the bolts of the diving board wouldn't have come unscrewed. So like that doesn't make any sense.
It's funny because like the movie starts setting up a logic and then it just starts ignoring that logic. And you're like, are we supposed to be questioning this? Is this supposed to be like making us go, is something else going on here? Or are we supposed to be like, why do you think bolts are connected to a computer?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So like, and it's never really, I mean, like, it's like, definitely like, it's just like, you never really know what's going on or why it's going on, but it doesn't, none of it makes any sense anyway. So it's like, it's a really fun bonkers watch with, I mean, you have, frozen fish coming alive. You have all kinds of just insane.
There's a really fun cameo. I mean, the cameo's not that fun, but it was fun because I'm like, oh, I never see her in anything else. The oldest sister in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, she plays Hillary Banks, I think. Mm. She's in it for a minute. Like, all kinds of weird stuff. And it's full of so many, like, kills that just happen out of nowhere where, it's fun all the way through. And then there's also things that make you really uncomfortable. Like, there's, like, a sex scene with, like, food involved.
Yeah, the one lady gets like temporarily blinded, and there's a weird like erotic food feeding like scene where he's like feeding her like limp like asparagus and stuff. It's
limp,
like,
asparagus,
the
is
fuck
not
is happening?
Yeah.
Like, why did you think that's a good idea? Yeah, it's questionable on all levels and enjoyable on all levels. Yeah. So
and watch a restored version of it because it's pretty too. There's lots of neat 80s neon happening.
It's really well shot.
I'm gonna whip out this one really fast because we're getting a little longer on time, but Truth or Dare, Critical Madness.
All Mike ever wanted, as far back as he could remember, was to be noticed, to be cared for.
I dare you to slice your arm off.
A feature film made exclusively for the home video market first. Not for theaters. Not for cable or pay TV. Peerless Films presents a first-run home video feature. Truth or Dare? A Critical Madness.
It's an early film by Tim Ritter. About a man who finds his wife is cheating on him. He ends up playing Truth or Dare with a hitchhiker, but he plays deadly Truth or Dare, where the the stakes get up pretty quickly. Like, it goes from throwing your wallet into the fire to cutting off your arm, you know.
Right.
I remember this.
Yeah, he goes to an asylum, or if you will, a hospital. Some years later, he escapes, and he has a copper mask down. He just kills. He goes on a killing spree.
Mm-hmm.
And including one of the members of the Backstreet Boys, right?
Yep. One of the Backstreet Boys. I don't know his name, but yes, one of them gets killed as a kid. Tim Ritter, I think he made it when he was 18 or 19. The disc that Sub Rosa put out, at least the one I have, has a making of that. It's over 2 hours long.
Jeez.
Yeah, but it's pretty fun because they find old footage from our old interviews they did for local TV at the time. The whole town they shot it was really excited about this movie, you know. Because
I like when towns get excited about bad movies being shot there, because like you get to all play then. They're like, yeah, I get to be in it? Oh, hell yeah.
Well, it also says something about the filmmaker. Like, the town is like supportive of this person. Mm-hmm. Like, they must be a decent person in the community, you know, like everybody like is like rallying around them. Like, yeah, let's make this happen. You know?
Yeah.
Right. I haven't seen any of these sequels, which is really weird because I liked it, but he made like 4 or 5 sequels, I guess.
Oh, really? I've seen a few of his other films, but I've never seen any of the sequels.
Remember how Anthony Cousins on the last interview, or the last episode rather, said the Evil Dead 2 was the movie he saw, and he's like, I want to make movies. I want to have fun. Mm-hmm. You know, that looks so... Truth or Dare, Critical Madness is mine. That happened to me. I saw it, and I was like, what? I could do that, I think. It's just fun. I wasn't like, that's so bad, I can do it. It was like, that looks like awesome. And yeah, it was pretty bad. It's shot on video. It's one of the early shot on video movies. Anyway, I immediately started making slasher films.
Nice.
When I was 12 or 13 when I saw this, you know. Mm-hmm. Elijah Wood is a big fan of this movie as well.
I was going to say, yeah. Yeah, he's co-screened it at the Alamo Drafthouse and stuff.
And he even said that was the movie that made him want to make movies.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a huge champion of it.
I remember saying, well, that escalated quickly before it even got to the full escalation in the beginning. Like, it's a wild
ride. Such a fun movie. It's bonkers. Mm-hmm. It just keeps going. You got to turn your brain off and just let it take you. And you'll have fun. It's definitely fun with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. I watched it with Doritos and Pepsi, and I loved it.
Oh, I don't think I could ever do that again. The thought of chips and soda.
Yeah, I know. I know. I couldn't do it again. But that's what I was eating back then. Probably had some Domino's pizza too.
Yeah. You didn't get the Little Caesars Bigfoot?
Or
was that Pizza Hut?
Recently, an object was sighted.
It was big. Bigger than big.
Huge, huge, large, astronomically big.
Big would be an understatement.
Very big. Huge.
Some guy. Big. Huge.
When it arrives, you better not be alone. Bigfoot.
Pizza Hut.
From Pizza Hut. 2 square feet of pizza, 21 slices on a tasty new crust, $10.99 for up to 3 toppings. It's bigger than pizza. Bigfoot from Pizza Hut, a legendary value.
Okay, then I'm going to go into another one that I feel like maybe people are aware of but haven't seen necessarily. This is one of the Jamie Lee Curtis films that she made after the success of Halloween, and she was the Scream Queen for a little while there, and just throwing her into random things. Well, actually, there's 2 of them that I wanted to talk about, but one of them is a Terror Train, Canadian shot slasher that takes place on a train. It's a college goes on this train ride for a New Year's party, and then there's a killer on the train and starts picking them off. It's especially fun because of the atmosphere and the setting. You would think that a film shot on a train that's a slasher would be really boring because it's really small and very contained. But the guy
that was what I thought was going to happen.
But it's a beautifully shot film, and it's the guy who shot it. I don't remember his name now, but he shot a lot of Stanley Kubrick's films. Mm-hmm. He was like his main DP for a long time. He really gets innovative with the way that they shoot the film, the way they light it, and it's really interesting. You have a small role by Vanity in it. Mm-hmm. You have a small role by. I'm blanking his name. Right,
David Copperfield.
Well, David Copperfield is in it. Yeah, as David Copperfield, mm-hmm. as he's a magician on the train who's their entertainment.
As a baby, wait, David Copperfield.
He plays David Copperfield. He plays himself.
I mean, I don't know if they say his name, but he's a magician. He's a stage magician. He's doing his act in the movie.
He's not. Yeah, he's not acting in the slightest.
So I don't know if they give him a name, but he's just being himself. Mm-hmm. But then it's the guy who is Ellis in Die Hard.
Hans Booby.
I'm your white knight. He's in it, and he's great as a kind of sleazy kind of a
different
college
kind of sleazy. Yeah. Not shaven this time though.
Yeah. Oh, Hart Boecher.
Yep, Hart Boecher. Yep, Boecher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also it's like sort of like a it's a New Year's costume party. So like everybody has masks. So there's a lot of really cool, interesting, like old man masks. There's like a weird frog mask. There's like a lot of like cool masks in it, which is always a fun thing in a slasher, yeah. I think.
That's always a fun angle to put in there because anyone could be the killer. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like it's a murder mystery. It's like it's really well shot and it's just got some cool atmosphere to it. And I think it's worth, if people haven't checked out Terror Train, it's a really fun watch, especially it's one of the couple really solid New Year's slashers. I mean, New Year's Evil isn't necessarily a solid movie. It's just an entertaining, dumb movie with the goofy voice and the rock and roll band playing the sweet New Year's Evil song.
But also, if you are a cinematographer nerd, definitely watch it. Because like, I think while we were watching it, we looked it up because we're like, this movie looks better than it has any right to. What is happening?
Yeah.
And it just gets better. Like it looks.
Yeah, there's this amazing. Beautiful Scream Factory Blu-ray that came out, but I think that's out of print now. And I believe that Scorpion put out another Blu-ray. So I haven't seen the Scorpion if they did any more work to it. But the one that we have the Scream Factory, and it looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, the guy is really kind of slumming. If you ask me, not that it's not a good movie. This is a man that worked with Kubrick.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy that he ended up on it.
Yeah. It's like I feel like he was doing Barry Lyndon or whatever, like the same year, or I can't. Or I remember when I was looking it up.
Five, so close. But he did kind of like take a turn. He went from Shining to like Terror Train, then Vice Squad, Beastmaster.
It's so weird.
For a bit and came back up later with Greystoke.
Yeah,
I'm guessing he was getting. Maybe I'm wrong, but like I'm guessing he was getting paid. Like, but the Kubrick gigs were like paying really well, and he was just like, I don't want to like have to put this much effort into everything I do. Like, I just want to work in an environment where they're going to let me do what I want creatively, and I can, you know, take home a paycheck and call it a day.
He could have had a falling out with Kubrick because Kubrick was so notoriously like, you know,
he did work with him for a while though.
Yeah.
Temperamental. He didn't work after The Shining anymore though.
Yeah. So The Shining might have been the last straw, because I mean that was a notoriously rough shoot. So
yeah.
It could have been that he was like, okay, I got to do something else. It's like I can't deal with the stress anymore. I don't know. I don't know the story behind it, why he ended up in Canada, but this was a tax shelter film in Canada. The Terror Train was, so like it maybe that was there's some sort of draw there. I don't know, but either way, Terror Train. It's a really fun watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My last one, Hack O' Lantern from 1988, is directed by an Indian director by the name of Jag Monroe. I'm sorry, Jog, if I'm mispronouncing it, because I think I am. But it stars Hi Pike. The actor Hi Pike, you might know him. He's the evil, sleazy mayor in Dolomite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's got a really deep voice and just sounds, he's not menacing.
We don't like trespassers here. You shouldn't have come, Bill.
You listen to me, old man, and you burn this into your brain. I want you to stay away for my son. You leave him alone.
Tommy was never yours. He belongs to something greater than you could ever imagine.
Not menacing, but scary in a different way.
Yeah, he's not really menacing as much as he's just a creepzoid. I mean, the plot in a nutshell is the grandfather is the leader of a satanic cult that sacrifices victims every Halloween evening, Halloween night, which is also the alternative title to this movie, Halloween Night. Every cliche you could think of that they did put in this, like, he's an Indian filmmaker, and the reason I brought that up is because out of nowhere, we get a somewhat Bollywood musical scene
featuring the metal band DC LaCroix with the song Devil Son.
They on the 4 out of 5 doctors level? I mean, we're talking...
I argue they are.
Yeah.
you ever watch a movie and then you're over, you're like, I don't know about that movie, but then like 20 minutes later it's still in your head and then you're like, I guess, yeah, that was weird.
All right, here's just a sample of the things this movie throws at you. You have porn actresses acting.
Tommy, all right. Nice costume, Tommy. You scared the hell out of me, okay? Jesus, I need a drink now.
Not well.
Oh, no.
You have incest.
No, but after all these years, you are still a temptation to me.
You have graveyard sex. You have a stand-up comedian who gets a 5-minute bit out of nowhere in this movie, who's probably the most unfunny person I've ever seen in my life, but he does do a great impersonation of a turkey.
You ever been at the wrong place at the wrong time? You know, like a turkey 3 days before Thanksgiving in the woods. He's scared. He just got away. He's a pet. He doesn't know what's going on. He looks at the hunters.
You have bad costume design. You have hammy acting by the lead. You have a crazy mother who reminded me a lot of Louise Lassier from Blood Rage. And
all the women do is talk about sex. And like they're always like gossiping each other, like, are you gonna have sex with them? Oh, maybe tonight. Oh, tell me. And then they talk about how we're going to go have sex in the graveyard later or whatever. And apparently the sister's main best friend meets their other brother, not the Tommy, not the one that's doing it, but the other brother is a cop. And he's been hired by who knows to guard the party that night. So he's supposed to be there. And it's a weird, stupid kegger. I don't know why they'd have a cop. But the friend is like, oh, he's so cute. And she falls for him. And they go on a date. Keep in mind, this whole movie takes place on the one day outside the flashback stuff. So she meets him. They go out there at the party. They leave the party, which he's guarding, and go to the graveyard, kick some kids out that are hanging out there and have sex. And they play it like it's the most romantic thing ever. And I'm like, they just met.
And they're banging in a graveyard. Like,
here's the best part. Is she goes back. She tells her sister, her friend, that she just fucked a brother in the graveyard. Next thing you know, we're back at the graveyard because she's showing her where she fucked him.
Anyway, let's get back to you and Roger. So, tell me, where did you guys do it?
Right there. Behind that tombstone. You did it there? You've got to be kidding, Beth.
Why would I kid you? Don't you have any respect for the dead?
They don't need my respect. They should feel honored.
What? I want to see where. Yeah. Show me the wet spot.
So, a couple random questions. I'm sorry if you've already covered this and I missed it. Was this shot in the U.S.?
Yes.
It's one that I've always been aware of, I think specifically because of the Massacre video release. It sounds interesting.
Fun.
Yeah, it's a great party movie again. All my movies tonight play better with people, I think.
With more than one person.
Right.
Maybe not visiting hours.
Except for maybe visiting hours.
Yeah, that's more of a slow burn kind of fun. But yeah. Well, then I'm gonna ramble off a few real quick. You want to talk about that one?
Yeah.
Just Before Dawn?
Yeah.
Run for your life. The nightmare has begun. It will find you in the hour when dream and reality merge. The last desperate moment of darkness.
All right, who is it?
Just Before Dawn.
As far as like camping in the woods slashers go, I think Just Before Dawn is one of my favorites. It has a really, like, it's really fun and atmospheric. It's got a couple fun kills, but it's also just like, it's got an awesome ending. Like it sticks to landing kind of when it comes to endings. But and then the score is really creepy. It's Brad Fidel who did it. So it's like, it's like all kind of whistling, kind of creepy atmosphere, kind of like soundscapey kind of score. Small role by George Kennedy. It's got a major leading role by, I'm blanking his name, but he's Star-Lord's grandfather in the opening of Guardians of the Galaxy. And he's the kind of like asshole Craig mayor, Henry. Craig Henry. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Asshole mayor in Slither. He's real young in it, but it's just a fun slasher in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by Jeff Lieberman, who I love. Jeff Lieberman. He only did a few films. He did this. He did Squirm, the killer worm movie. He did Blue Sunshine, the kind of crazy LSD movie. And then he also did Remote Control, the Kevin Dillon video killer VHS tape movie. So yeah, Lieberman's one of my favorites, but I think Just Before Dawn is high on his filmography, in my opinion. It's a fun one.
Have you ever seen Satan's Little Helper?
I actually haven't. That's one of the last ones like that I need to check off.
Likewise. And
I've heard it's fun, but it's way later, right? It's like it's like 2000.
Yeah, he went from last movie was 88, I guess, with Remote Control, and then 2004 he came out with Satan's Little Helper.
Yeah, I do need to see it though. It's a Christmas killer movie, so
yeah. Yeah, no, he's great.
But yeah, Just Before Dawn, Bloody Birthday, which was one of the early Tape Freak screenings we did.
1970, three children were born during a total eclipse of the sun. Now, 10 years later, they share a terrible compulsion to kill, and no one can stop them. If they decide they don't like you, watch out.
Yeah. Which it falls into the killer kid category, but it's really fun. It's got like a small early role cameo by Michael Dudikoff as one of the cops. People will know from the American Ninja movies and whatnot. But yeah, it's just the kids in it are really creepy.
They're really good.
It's like they're really good at like setting kind of that tone of like, it's really unnerving because of like the kids are so like, just like, I just feel so like unrelentingly like in their killing of everybody. And just like,
I haven't seen it since I was much, much younger, but it's reminded me in that vein of the movie with Macaulay Culkin and
The Good Son.
The Good Son, yeah. Where you're just like, oh, they're, which I can't remember which one is even evil now, but like, oh, he's really evil. Like these kids are like,
Macaulay Culkin's the evil one, yeah.
You're like, oh, you just found some evil children and put them in your movie.
You know, what's funny is Elijah Wood played evil really well in Sin City, though.
He did. Yeah.
You know, so, but Macaulay Culkin did okay in Good Son, if I remember correctly. I don't know.
Yeah.
Directed by Joseph Rubin, who did The Stepfather, just to tie it all back around.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Another one, you were talking about Blood Rage before. If people haven't seen Blood Rage, it's the great Thanksgiving slasher film. It's so good. It was one of those ones that was kind of hard to get until that Arrow Blue came out. And it's a really great 80s, like, was kind of a, you know, lost or forgotten 80s slasher that's kind of come more into the awareness. But if people haven't seen Blood Rage, watch it on Thanksgiving. Great film. The lead who plays twin brothers does an incredible job for a low budget film playing two clearly different characters.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said before, Louise Lasser plays their mom, complete lunatic, and she's great.
So
It's a really fun watch.
Yeah. If you haven't watched it, what do you do with your life? Go watch it.
Right. Yeah. Blood Rage is great. Another one wasn't as easy to get until recent years, but it was kind of, I mean, people are probably aware of it, but it was another Jamie Lee Curtis film that she shot in Australia. It's called Road Games.
Stacey Keach is quid.
No, no, it's Q-U-I-D. D is in death, the young girl, you cretin.
Jamie Lee Curtis is Hitch.
Attic and camera.
Now you're looking for a little adventure, huh?
I could go to Disneyland for a little adventure, but I'm looking for a little excitement.
Road Games.
It's my game.
Okay, Sherlock.
If someone doesn't stop soon, there won't be anyone left alive to play. Road Games.
It's her and Stacey Keach, and it's basically Rear Window in a semi on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They witness a murder and they're chasing the killer on this like long highway. It's got some really great cinematography of like Australia, but it's just a really fun, like very much just a Rear Window kind of knockoff, but it's a fun slasher. The killer's like killing people with like guitar strings and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of got a giallo vibe to it, but also, I mean, it's clearly influenced by Hitchcock, and so much so that the director went on to do Psycho 2.
Richard Franklin, says me.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. All the Psycho sequels also.
Yeah, Colette loves all the Psycho sequels.
If you've not seen them, they're ridiculous, and they are so fun. And I watched them all when I was younger because I was afraid of horror movies, and my best friend knew what ones were cheesy enough that I could get through. But we watched that one when we were, I don't know, middle school, and I developed a crush on the guy whose name I always forget.
Jeff Fahey.
Mm-hmm. He's a scumbag in the movie. Like, holy buckets. When I watched it as an adult, I was like, what's wrong with me? But
he's always kind of a poor man, Michael Biehn, to me.
Yeah, a little bit. Also had a crush on him. But they're good and they're fun and they're weird. Watch those two.
Specifically, Psycho 2, I think, is a really good movie. I think they're always written off because there's like, you know, you have a sequels to like such a classic film.
And they have nothing to do. Well, I mean, it's all tied to the same like.
And Anthony Perkins is in all of them.
Yeah, but they also have nothing to do with the first one. Yeah, really.
Like, yeah, the second one's really fun.
Him continuing on his murderous way.
I always like the third one too that Perkins directed as well.
Did he do the third one and the fourth one, or because I thought he did the fourth one, because the fourth one's the one with like the Colin show. I thought he directed that one.
You know what? I haven't seen part four, but part three he definitely directed. That's the one that's got the nun, and that's got Jeff Behe.
Yeah. The fourth one is fun. I'd say the fourth is the least of them, least successful in my opinion of the four movies. But it's still better than it has any right to be, being a fourth Psycho sequel.
Oh my god! And it does a lot of backstorying, which I think is fun. But like, if you're not into like unpacking a backstory from a classic character, avoid that one.
Yeah. Also, if you're a fan of the Friday the 13th series and you like camp slashers, I feel like Madman is one that gets overlooked a lot, and that's a lot of fun.
There is a legend.
If you say his name above a whisper, he'll get you.
There is a warning.
On certain nights when the moon is full, he's out there stalking in the woods.
There is a madman.
His name is Mars. Mad Man Mars.
It's also got Ken Forhey, tying it back to Death Spa. But it's just like, it's a camp slasher. There's a great campfire tale that kind of sets up the story. It's got a fun campfire tale song that they wrote for like a theme to the movie. And there's some really inventive kills in that one. It's just like, it's just pretty, like, again, it's nothing crazy. It's nothing you haven't seen before, but it's a lot of fun as far as camp slashers go. Mm-hmm. And then
not to be confused with I, Madman, also on your list.
Well, that was one I was just kind of jotting down. I, Madman is a bizarre one because it's
that's comic book coming out of the book.
Pulp novels. Yeah. It's directed by Tibor Tabaks, whatever, the guy who did The Gate. And it's the same effects artist who did The Gate. So there's a lot of like forced perspective and lots of creature effects in I, Madman. The lady works in a bookstore and she's obsessed with like pulp novels, and the character, the slasher killer, who's like kind of almost like a Jack the Ripper kind of character that comes out of the books. And there's a lot of surreal, like nightmare logic and weird, crazy sets and stuff like that. But he's got a cool look. He's got like kind of a half covered his face and a kind of fedora. And he's got like one eye is like all, like kind of messed up. But
I remember liking it a lot.
I just put that on there because it was a really unique one. I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about it, but yeah.
Yeah, then I read it on your list and you had to.
So I had to talk about it. But the last one I was going to mention is the movie The Mutilator, which is another one that Arrow put out as a beautiful Blu-ray that has a feature-length documentary about the making of it. And there's a bunch of stories, but it's the perfect example of how it's not a good movie by any means. It's just like the tone, like how tone, if you don't know how to nail tone, it's just like it kind of like ruins the movie. And this movie is so all over the place. Like the most unlikable characters, the quote unquote comic relief guy is one of the most obnoxious comic relief characters I've in any movie. He's really obnoxious, but
careful. You have not seen Hack a Lantern yet.
That's true. That's true. I haven't seen that one yet, but it's really well shot. And it's like basically the premise is a kid's it opens with a flashback scene, like a lot of these movies do, where they set up like some sort of backstory that they're going to come back around to. It opens with this like really brutal opening where this kid is, the mom's making dinner or making food in the kitchen. And this kid in the other room is cleaning a shotgun or a rifle. And he puts a note on the door of like the gun case that says, happy birthday, daddy. I clean them all myself. And then happens to fire off the rifle through the wall and kills his mom. And then his dad like basically comes home and like is like, distraught, obviously. And then it flash forward and that kid has a terrible relationship with his dad, rightfully so, is like in a, like he's like in, they're in college and they're like on fall break, which is the other title for the movie is Fall Break. He gets a call from his dad that says that he needs him to go to his summer home on the beach and close it up for the season, and so that he can't go hang out with his friends. But then they decide that they're going to party at the summer house while they clean it up.
They and always do.
So all the kids go to the summer house and then, of course, are picked off one by one in a various using various hunting tools, because it was like his hunting shack on the beach. There's like a lot of fishing tools.
I don't feel like people use a beach homes as their hunting touch.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't like quite base, make sense, but that was what they had as a setting for this movie. And
they had it. They went with it.
The director only did this one movie, I believe. He was a real estate guy who owned a bunch of hotels. And decided he had a bunch of money, and he said that either he was going to buy a winery in France or he's going to make a movie, and decided he was going to make a movie and regrets not having bought the winery in France.
I'm sure he does.
He has a bunch of money, and he like did a bunch of market research on like how to make a movie and took a class on screenwriting.
Oh my God.
And all kinds of things. It's like a business guy who decides like, oh, I can do this. I can be creative. But then like hires a bunch of really talented people. So he hired a cinematographer who knew what he's doing. He hired Mark Sjostrom, which was one of his very first effects gigs, and went all in on the effects work. And the effects in this movie are what's worth watching it for. Like the effects are brutal. They're really graphic, but really well done. But it's just like,
it's also one of the only slashers that I can think of right now that takes place on a beach.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of nonsense. Like I said, the characters are terrible. There's an opening song that's like, it's the opening song is using the alternate title Fall Break, but he hired the guy who wrote Under the Boardwalk to write the opening song. So it's like this goofy, like, it's like, oh, we're gonna go on a fall break. It's like, the theme doesn't make any sense. It tonally doesn't fit.
When the leaves of summer turn red and gold, and the football games bring a hint of a cold, time to get away. We'll pack the car with escape in mind, forgetting about classes, leaving books behind, time to get away. Empty cottage sitting on the shore, tourists all left about a month before, and we're gonna have a good time.
Gonna have a good time.
Yeah, we're gonna have a good time.
We're going on now.
A ball break, walking hand in hand.
It's so all over the place, but it's just like, it's if you like weird train wrecks like that, and again, it's worth watching for the effects if you're into that kind of thing. Man, it's a mess. It is such a mess of a movie.
Yeah, it is. It's got one of the better posters out there, though.
Yeah,
I've always been. I mean, it's really not. It's like the movie. It's not even really that good, but it just clicks all those. I don't know. I just love it. By sword, by pick, by axe, bye bye.
Yeah, I was gonna say the tagline is one of my favorites too. Yeah, it's so good. It's just, yeah, like the guy, the director, like, again, like he knew how to hire talented people to make his poster and to figure out his tagline, you know, and to, all this stuff. Like he knew the right people to hire. He just didn't know how to make a movie at all.
Yeah. You know, Tommy Wiseau did it too. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, we could go on forever on slashers, but
I want to say, I'm not going to dive into these at all, but because I know a lot of people who never gave the like 90s slashers movies a very big chance, like Scream obviously, but also like I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh my gosh,
I think he's dead.
We can't just leave him here.
Oh, tell me, little Miss Prelaw, what's the charge for manslaughter? We make a pact right here and now, we take the Sorry Grave.
For the last year, four friends have kept a secret.
Are you on drugs?
Then what is wrong?
I've had a rough year.
But not all secrets stay buried.
Somebody sent this to me.
Oh my God.
Someone knows.
I know what you did last summer. Ooh.
What they thought would be a new beginning.
Toast to us.
Is becoming a dead end.
Somebody tried to kill you last night. We have to go to the police.
If he wanted me dead, he could have done it.
And the mistake they made.
It was an accident.
There was no accident. It was murder.
What if he's still alive?
Hey! What are you doing here?
Is coming back to haunt them.
Oh my gosh.
He's after me too.
I got a letter.
I got run over. Helen gets her hair chopped off. Julie gets a body in a trunk, and you get a letter? That's balanced.
She's waiting for us to unravel.
The wait is over.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
I
you did last summer.
And the sequel to that, the sequels to Scream, like
Urban Legends.
Urban Legends. Those are all really fun. And if you've not given them a chance,
Cherry Falls.
Cherry Falls is good.
Yeah. And
Brittany Murphy.
Watch those. Because, yeah. Just because they're not old doesn't mean they're not good. And actually, they are old now. So.
For a lot of people, though, that is like the era they're going
That's
back
the
to.
Like,
we obviously covered more like early 90s to like back into the 70s here, like on this episode. But like, yeah, there is a lot of great slashers in the 90s. There was a great boom because of Scream.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of awesome stuff that was made. And it, yeah, a lot of it holds up.
But very I mean, point. Overall. Pretty known, but like I know a lot of people who are just like, oh, whatever. Like, I'm like, no, you really, they're good.
Well, they made a lot of them too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's probably more than you know because,
oh yeah,
Blockbuster video stores alone probably had, you know, were buying them up left and right. So people mm-hmm. were making them, like the Asylum, you know,
right, movie yeah,
group and stuff. They were doing just making them. So there's a lot of them. I've seen some really bad ones too. But yeah, obviously Scream is awesome and Cherry mm-hmm. Falls is a great one. I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's good. You know, I like those. That one. I kind of went weird. The sequel, didn't they go to like the Bahamas? And
I don't know if I couldn't remember if I'd seen the sequel to that one or to
Urban Legend.
But I mean, any of them are. Yeah.
Anyway,
I think it's because we always look at those ones as they're like all the pretty actors of the time were always in those to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Just, mm-mm. you know, when you're cynical like me.
Yeah. But yeah, there's so many. And there's the deeper you, I mean, there's like, and it also, there's like all these release companies are digging up ones that like, it's like, there's so many that are like, even Vinegar Syndrome or Severin and Arrow have come up with. There's like, I've never even heard of that before. Like, where did that one come from? Like, it seems like there's a bottomless well of these films that are just being unearthed now.
There's something so rock and roll about slasher films. It's always going to keep coming back. You know, mm-hmm. we'll go to other things, but we always circle back.
Yeah. Well, it's a common fear, I think, too. Like, you know, you can touch on a lot of like common paranoias amongst people, like, you know, being home alone and getting like creepy phone calls or like,
yeah,
you know, being stalked through the woods at night. Like,
yeah.
Well, and like you said before, at the beginning of the episode, kind of tying it all back around, is that you could really put the slasher like idea onto any genre. Like you could literally have like, basically like the setup of like a rom-com where like they're locked into a grocery store at night and then you would have, okay, it's a slasher now. Like, mm-hmm. or like, you know, you said
Road Games. That is definitely a road trip movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of these. I mean, like even like there's a bunch of Alien knockoffs we've watched where there's not even an alien. It's just like a slasher on a ship. But even like the first Alien is kind of a slasher movie. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I mean, it plays that way. Like the second one's more, gets into the more of the action, but it's like, yeah, I mean, like we have a sci-fi alien movie in it, but we're going to make it a slasher.
Well,
it's like,
and there's a sci-fi Friday the 13th.
Yeah. There mm-hmm. you go.
Yeah. Yep. Jason in space. That's all we need. Yeah. Oh, we could make a whole episode. We probably will one day of what all the franchises went to space for some reason.
Yeah,
right. We really did. Like we've done as much as we can on Earth. Now we must go to space.
Yeah, that's their jumping the shark.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Or you have things like, you know, Critters where they just go back into space.
Yeah, they just go back to space.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess everybody watch some slashers for Halloween. Check us out on Facebook at the Video Killers Facebook page. Tape Freaks Facebook page. We have Tape Freaks Blogspot. Go to Podient with the which has all of our blog show notes, which has all the links to all these films that we're talking about and some other fun goodies. And yeah, come see us check us out next week when we're going to be just diving more into some of the films we've been watching and some other fun nerdy trivia.
Yeah, it'll be fun regardless.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Say goodnight, sloppy sleeper.
Sloppy sleeper.
Sleepy noodle basket. Noodles. Yeah, sure.
With spaghetti or whatever name is. Like.
No.
On the next episode of Video Killers.
and buy us sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die. To sleep. To sleep. Perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. So long, life!